I'm delighted once again to have one of our most in-demand commentators, the unconventional economist, Lise Van Onselen, who comes with a treasury, I think, of common sense from macrobusiness.com. Welcome, Lise.
G'day, David. Thanks for having me on again.
A pleasure. Now, you have an excellent piece that you've drawn my attention to, The Australian Economy Caught in a Productivity Catch-22. And we're going to put up one of your wonderful graphs on that, and I think you'll be able to explain instantly what all this is about.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, David. So Australia's productivity growth has basically fallen. Australia's productivity, I should say, labour productivity, has fallen to 2016 levels. Now, what labour productivity measures, it basically measures how much output Australia produces per worker. And the amount of output per worker has actually fallen to 2016 levels. So we've gone backwards 8 years in productivity. And the more interesting thing is that this has been a trend that's been going on pretty much since the mid-2000s. So as that chart shows, Australia's productivity growth is, labour productivity growth has fallen for the better part of around 20 years. And Australia's per capita GDP growth has also fallen for about 20 years. And the interesting thing about it, David, is that it coincides with when Australia massively ramped up its immigration intake. So in the mid-2000s, the federal government more than doubled Australia's net overseas migration, and it's really ratcheted up. It's got bigger and bigger ever since. And what this has basically done, the impact on productivity has come about through what economists call capital shallowing. So what this means is that when your population grows faster than your business investment, your infrastructure investment, and your housing, you effectively get less capital per worker, which makes you less productive and reduces your growth rate, your per capita growth rate. Now, just to give you a real world example, or I guess a stylized example to explain this, imagine that you run a cafe and you have one coffee machine and two staff that operate that coffee machine, and they can produce, say, 50 coffees per hour to sell. If you double the number of staff, so you have four staff using that one coffee machine, you're not going to double your output because those four staff will have to wait for each other to finish making their coffees. They'll bump into each other. You'll get congestion, those sorts of things in the kitchen. And it'll mean that instead of producing 100 coffees per hour, which is keeping your labour productivity constant, you'll produce, say, 75 coffees per hour. So you've increased the number of people, but you haven't increased the capital stock, i.e. coffee machines, to go with those people, which means you can't produce as many coffees per person. And that is effectively what the Australian economy has done for 20 years. We've grown the population aggressively. So actually this century, since 2000, Australia's population has grown by 8.5 million people. But we haven't had the infrastructure, the business investment, the housing, et cetera, to keep up with that population growth. And as a result, we've seen massive rises in congestion, less capital per worker, and we've ultimately got lower productivity growth. And this has also happened in Canada as well. So Canada's embarked on exactly the same policy. They've had a massive immigration boom. And Canada and Australia actually have terrible labour productivity growth. Both nations' productivity growth has collapsed. And we now have stagnant type economies, which are growing in an aggregate sense, in an overall sense, because of population growth, but per head, they're shrinking. And this is really this capital shallowing story. And an excellent economist named Jared Minnick, who's the former chief economist of Morgan Stanley, he now runs his own consultancy, actually did a lot of research. He released a research report this week, which proves this capital shallowing point. And what it shows is that Australia's net capital investment as a share of GDP has crashed to around recessionary levels at the same time as we're growing our population aggressively. And as a result, we've diluted the nation's capital stock.
Leith, does this explain why a country of this tremendous wealth that we have is slipping behind on a per capita basis, per head basis? A place like Singapore. Singapore has no mineral wealth, and yet it's becoming fantastically richer per head. And the people, that means the people are becoming richer, And we're becoming poorer, although we're sitting on this enormous wealth.
Yeah, and Australia's doing exactly the wrong thing because we're diluting our mineral wealth. So we've been incredibly lucky to have pretty much everything the world needs other than oil. We've got enormous mineral wealth, but then we're diluting that mineral wealth aggressively through this huge population expansion. Again, we've had, you know, 8.5 million people this century has been added to Australia's population. That's 8.5 million people diluting the nation's mineral wealth. And it was interesting that an outfit called Financial Times Alphaville, which is basically the Financial Times economics blog, put out a report in the last couple of weeks which showed that the leading countries in the world for overall GDP growth are all high population growth countries, but those same countries are actually towards the bottom of the league table in per capita growth. So, you know, this is countries like Australia, Canada, New Zealand. I'm trying to think the other one. I think it was Spain was in there as well. These are all countries that have grown very quickly through population growth. Sorry, they've grown their populations aggressively and they've had decent overall growth. But once you strip out, once you measure the growth per capita, so once you divide by the population, all those countries have been amongst the worst in the world. And I think this gets down to, again, this capital shallowing argument. If you grow your population too fast and you grow it faster than you can build infrastructure, business investment and housing, you end up becoming poorer because you spread those things over more people and you become less productive.
And if I may interrupt you, the cause of this, obviously, is the federal government. They're the ones who determine immigration and international education, which seems to be really immigration in disguise. But it's also the state governments for not standing up to it. You've pointed out previously, for example, the state governments seeming, at least New South Wales and Victoria, seeming to be determined to put us all into high-rise slums rather than the state government standing up to the federal government and saying, stop this. We have to have a different policy.
Yeah, and it makes no sense because the you know, we understand why the federal government does it. The federal government collects about 80% of the tax revenue. It collects all the personal income tax, the corporate tax. So growing the population is a very easy way to grow the tax base if you're the federal government. And also it's an easy way for the Treasury to say, and the government to say, look, we're good economic managers because we haven't had a recession for 20 years, even though we've had multiple per capita recessions because the way the economic statistics are reported, they're reported in aggregate. But the state governments, on the flip side, collect only about 13% of the nation's tax revenue. The local government collect about the remaining seven. And as a result, the state governments bear most of the cost of immigration because they're responsible for most of the service delivery, the infrastructure, those sorts of things. And I've never understood why the Victorian government and the New South Wales government don't get together and demand that the federal government stop flooding the place with new people.
If I can interrupt you, you seem to be the only person who makes a big point of this. Is it because my reading is so limited that I'm not reading anything? I read all of the newspapers, for example, but I don't see anybody else stressing this point. I don't see editorials. I saw lots of editorials in The Australian over the years against President Trump when he was a candidate, but I haven't seen editorials in the newspapers about this or much commentary about this. Am I just not reading widely enough, not listening widely enough?
No, you're absolutely right. I don't understand why more economists don't look at this capital shallowing issue or capital. So effectively, you know, it's a macro business, which is where I write for. And it's, you know, economists like Jared Minnick, who wrote about it last year as well, and he's done another detailed report on it, which you can read at macrobusiness.com.au.
Who is that? Could you repeat that again?
Sorry, Jared Minnick. He's the former chief economist of Morgan Stanley, and he runs his own. He went on an ad on his own. He runs his own advisory business.
Could you just spell that for us so we can make a note of it?
I think it's J-E-R-A-R-D.
Right.
And then Minnick, M-I-N-A-C-K.
Right, thank you.
If you just type in Jared Minnick macro business, you'll see his article. It's on our website. But he released a report this week, and it pretty much confirms everything that I've been saying, that macro business has been saying for years, that this high immigration policy is directly lowering Australia's productivity growth through capital shallowing. Again, We're growing a population faster than we've grown infrastructure, housing, and business investment, and that's leading to lower productivity growth and less capital per worker. And just to put it into simple terms, if you're a resident of Sydney or Melbourne, for example, you have experienced this firsthand, because in the last 20 years, think about how much longer you spend in traffic congestion. Think about how much longer everything it takes to do anything.
Right.
That there is a productivity burden.
Yes, and Leith, this brings me immediately to another of your articles, which has a really enticing title. It says, Migrantocracy. Migrantocracy invites itself into your bedroom. Now, what's that all about?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cheeky headline. So, yes. So the ABC ran a report where basically it complained that Australia doesn't have enough houses, but it argued that one of the solutions to it is to basically for households. So what it said was, we don't have enough houses, but Australia has a lot of spare bedrooms. So it says that, you know, we have a lot of people who are living in homes with spare bedrooms, and that if we freed up those bedrooms, i.e., you know, if you're an older person with a couple of spare bedrooms in a house, you rented it to younger people, we could accommodate 5 million more people.
That's what argument. In the communist countries, when Eastern Europe was all communist, people in Budapest, for example, were told how many people they could have in their place, if they were allowed to keep the place that they owned, if they were allowed to lease it from the state, rent it from the communist state. They were then told who else would be living in it, and they put in whole families into a bedroom. Will that be what they'll be doing to accommodate this extraordinary influx of people? Will they be telling us, using levers of taxation and so on, to force people to take whole families into bedrooms in their houses?
Well, you never know. I mean, the way the government works, they could end up putting a spare bedroom tax. We just don't know. But I guess my central point was that all the policy solutions in this country are all distractions, right? So the number one reason, the fundamental reason why Australia has a housing shortage is because of its big migration program. Again, we've grown the population by 8.5 million people this century alone, almost entirely through immigration. So, you know, more than 2/3 of that growth directly came from immigration. And then when migrants have kids, that also creates a second round impact, right? So all of Australia's projected future population growth is going to come from immigration as well. So the whole notion that we've got a housing shortage and here's the solution is ridiculous when you consider that the real solution is to slow immigration down. You know, I've said over and over again that in the next 39 years, according to the Intergeneration Report, Australia's population is projected to grow by 13 million people.
In the next 39 years.
That is like adding another Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane to Australia's existing population in 39 years. Now, that's going to require a heck of a lot of housing, infrastructure, business investment, all those sorts of things. Otherwise, the productivity growth is going to collapse.
Could you repeat that? In 39 years, we're going to have how many more people?
13 million.
And that's people. Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane?
And Brisbane, roughly. Yeah, so it's roughly adding another Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane to the current population of this time. So we're currently at about 27.5 million.
So young people ought to be warned about this, that this is going to be their lives.
Yeah, that's it. This is the official projection from the federal government. From the 2023 Intergeneration Report, Australia's population will be 40.5 million people by the year 2062-63. So that's 39 years from now.
So they're saying to young people,
13 million people.
They're saying to young people who haven't acquired a home now, you'll probably never get one.
Or you'll live in a high-rise shoebox. That'll cost a lot of money and will likely be defective.
And that, of course, then reduces the birth rate, because people who live in high-rise shoeboxes tend not to have the same size families as those who have separate homes. This is terrible.
Yeah. It's absolutely terrible, and the solution again to the ABC is we got to utilize our, you know, start renting out our bedrooms. It's like no, we need to cut immigration because we're running. It's been too high for too long, and it's projected to be like that forever. That's ridiculous.
Well, let's come to a third one, and it's about the RBA. And I must say, I'm beginning to admire the new head of the RBA because she's standing up. She won't be told by the government what to do. and she won't do things to suit the government for the next election, it seems. You say that the RBA forecasts a record per capita recession, which is something you've been very strong on for a considerable period of time.
Yeah, so we are already in a record per capita recession. So we've gone backwards for six consecutive quarters, which is we've never done that before. We've never had a decline that's lasted this long. And the Reserve Bank's statement of monetary policy was released this week, and alongside its interest rate decision. And what it actually downgraded Australia's growth forecast for this year. And what it forecasts is that Australia's economy would grow by 1.5% this calendar year, but that's against population growth of nearly 2%. So what the Reserve Bank said is that under their official forecast, that we're going to have at least two more quarters of negative per capita growth, because the six quarters we've had currently only goes to the June quarter.
This is headline-making news, really, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I'll just add, though, that the RBA's forecasts are actually better than the IMF's latest economic outlook, which projected 1.2% growth, and the OECD's latest economic outlook, which projected 1.1% growth, and Deloitte also projected 1.1% growth. So under whether it's the RBA, the IMF, the OECD, or Deloitte, they all project that this per capita recession is going to last till at least the end of the year and probably into next year, maybe to the first or second quarter. So, we've already got six quarters consecutive, which is a record. It's officially forecast to go to eight and potentially nine or 10, because they only give sort of six monthly forecasts. So, we'll have to see, but officially we are already experiencing the longest per capita recession on record, and the RBA officially projects it's going to last even longer. So it's pretty ordinary conditions we have.
Leith, you are really issuing some very basic warnings which go to the heart of the future of this country, and it's extraordinary how that sort of information doesn't seem to be getting through in relation to the media. But please keep up your work, keep up the message, and certainly you'll get lots of opportunities on this platform to present that. Thank you once again.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for all the good work you're doing. It's very important.
Thank you.